produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. Canadian medical marijuana patient and activist has conviction overturned. The Supreme Court of Canada ruled unanimously that Grant Krieger, a medical marijuana activist who also suffers from multiple sclerosis, was deprived of his, quote, constitutional right, close quote, to a trial by jury. The judge in Krieger's criminal trial directed the jury to find the accused guilty of possession of marijuana for the purposes of trafficking. The Canadian Supreme Court described that by doing so, the original trial judge had reduced the jury's role to a ceremonial one. In a 7-0 judgment, the top court quashed Mr. Krieger's conviction and ordered a new trial by jury. Quote, the trial judge's direction was not a slip of the tongue, close quote, Justice Morris Fish wrote. He continued, in effect, the trial judge reduced the jury's role to a ceremonial one, close quote. Mr. Krieger uses marijuana to help cope with his multiple sclerosis and has been a high-profile advocate for medical marijuana in Alberta. We spoke with Mr. Krieger by phone this morning from Calgary. Grant, welcome today to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much.
And Grant, tell us how all of this began.
Well, this all stems back to 1999 when I was arrested for cultivating. The first of the two jury trials, which was for myself personally, I won. And what I did is I won an exemption for a lifetime to be able to cultivate and possess what I need for my own medicine, cannabis marijuana. The second part of the trial was a jury trial over the trafficking, which I did win. They found me not guilty, but the Crown appealed it. And when it went up up the ladder, they found that the judge erred in instructions to the jury, so I had to go back in front of another jury, which was the 2003 trial. Now, during the 2003 trial, the judge disallowed the defense of necessity, and as soon as he allowed the defense of necessity was out the door, what he told the jury was, I want you to go elect the foreman, find him guilty, and come back. Now, no judge can instruct the jury to find me guilty. He has to offer an array of options for the jury. However, the jury ran into problems with it. They asked for their oath card. The oath card went in. They kept mulling over the problem they had, and then two of the more elder jurors asked to be excused. And the judge refused them and berated them into finding me guilty. And eventually, we had the jury polled when they reached a decision, and all 12 people said I was guilty, but they were all crying. So at that point, I had to appeal because I wanted the trial by my peers, not by a judge. And we appealed, and it went to the Supreme Court. I was there on January the 12th. It took them 10.5 months to release the decision, but I have a new jury trial coming now, providing the Crown, the provincial attorney general, wants to proceed against it. However, if they don't, I already have a jury trial lined up in Manitoba. I'll be coming on the docket next month to be able to get a trial date.
And are you being targeted here because of your high-profile activism on the part of patients in Canada?
Yes. I only have one interest, and the interest I have is for the ill, the injured, and the dying, because those people are very special, very near and dear to me. I know what it's like to be ill and not well, and everybody in this country is guaranteed a better quality of life by the Charter of Rights. But the trouble is the government doesn't give it to them. In fact, even with my exemption, I'm not able to cultivate because the insurance companies have stepped in and said I can't cultivate. I can't get insurance. Many problems going around on the marijuana board, so to speak, here in Canada between the government, the courts, Health Canada, and the people. Now, the only way things change in this nation is through jury trials. And when if a jury is not able to nullify a bad law, then that's society's conscience being cut off at the knees because they're not allowed to speak.
Granted, sounds like there's a lot of confusion there regarding medical marijuana. Here in the U.S., we perhaps have an unfounded view that Canada is much more evolved than us when it comes to medical marijuana, but it sounds like it isn't being put into practice there.
Well, it's not. That's the problem. Like, you have states that have passed bills, but what happens is the Drug Enforcement Agency walk in and do the dirty work because they're autonomous. Up here in Canada, we have a government that was trying to decriminalize, that got pumped out of power. We have Stephen Harper in power now, and he's good friends with George W. Bush, and that's a mistake right there. I'm sorry to say it. What we're doing is, here in Alberta, we're becoming more and more Americanized, where we're going to drug courts now. We want to go for the three-strike rule. When I go to court on February 12th for sentencing, because I was in front of a provincial court judge on September 25th, and he found me guilty of 2 counts of trafficking. So now I'm looking at mandatory jail time coming February 12th because of the 2 counts of trafficking. In the meantime, the Supreme Court has rendered its decision. I'm supposed to be getting a new trial, and I have a trial lined up in Manitoba. It doesn't make sense anywhere. When a person provides a community service and he's providing help to people, there's no harm attached to that, and all laws are based on harm. So what harm did I do to justify jail time, fine, probation, or even the convictions?
Grant, you mentioned the jurors in tears, crying as they were polled in the verdict. Having worked as an activist there in Canada, what do you encounter as far as attitudes held by regular Canadians regarding medical marijuana?
Well, redneck Alberta is the worst place to be. Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, those are the three red hard provinces. The rest of the provinces are fairly more liberal with the marijuana laws. It's a nightmare. It's just like in the United States. It's a nightmare because the government doesn't know what to do with it. The product they provide out of the mineshaft in Flin Flon is substandard. I wouldn't even use that stuff. It's trash. But the biggest stumbling block of them all are the insurance companies, because the insurance companies, I lost my license 18 months ago because, unfortunately, I couldn't get a signature on a form from a doctor because the insurance company stepped into the doctor and told him, you sign any forms for cannabis and we'll revoke your malpractice insurance.
It sounds like the hard-won rights of patients there in Canada to use medical cannabis are being completely sidestepped here by the insurance companies, who I assume are private for-profit companies.
Oh, everybody's for-profit. There's nobody that's not out for profit. Look at all the play toys these big boys have in the insurance companies. It's ridiculous what they're doing to us. But we're not sure here in Canada who's in charge. Is it the government? Is it the court? Or is it the insurance companies? Or is it the police departments?
And Grant, how long have you used medical marijuana to treat your multiple sclerosis?
Well, I started using it in 92 in a heavier way, but I was also taking a bunch of pharmaceuticals, and I couldn't distinguish the side effects from the pharmaceuticals to what the cannabis was doing, because when you're taking a whole lot of pharmaceuticals and you add a new medicine into it, you can't distinguish what's doing what. What I did one night is I took sufficient enough dosage of pills that I wouldn't wake up the next day. And when I did wake up in the hospital, I wasn't quite happy because I didn't have my wish met. But then I had two choices. I could go back to the way I was, or I could look at things differently and try things differently. And I chose an alternative path. And the alternative path I chose has led me to a point where I have to fight for this. I have no choice because sick people need to get a hold of this. And if the government isn't going to supply it, I will. In fact, when I have a probation officer coming out here on December the 18th to do a probation report over those two charges of trafficking. And basically what I'm going to be telling her is the only way I'm going to be stopping what I do is if you give me life in jail without parole. And if I do ever get out of jail with my dying breath, I'll do the same thing I've done in the past.
Grant, I want to thank you again for joining us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash to discuss your case today.
Well, I thank you very much, Chris, and I wish everybody out there a very happy day.
Grant Krieger is a medical marijuana patient and activist in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. His website can be found at KriegerFoundation.org. We have links at NormalAudioStash.com.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Welcome back to the Audio Stash today on this fine fall Monday. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. As Election Day approaches quickly, we'll be speaking with the activists and organizers around the country who have made local ballot initiatives possible. In our activism show today, we're featuring an interview with Neil Levine of the Committee to Regulate and Control Marijuana in Nevada. Polling in Nevada suggests that voters are nearly equally split over the proposition. And while many of us think of only the bright lights of Las Vegas, Nevada's rural communities offer a fascinating insight into the popularity of marijuana law reform in what has been traditionally seen as conservative areas of the United States. Stay tuned here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash this and next week for extensive election coverage. We'll have a Normal News special podcast on Election Day as well. Link up to all of Normal's audio podcasts at norml.org/podcast. Joining us today from Las Vegas, Nevada is the campaign director for the Committee to Regulate and Control Marijuana, Neil Levine. Nevada voters have the chance to approve Question 7 as a ballot initiative on November 7th. This initiative is perhaps the broadest-reaching reform proposed in the country this year and could make Nevada the first state in the U.S. to adopt regulations that encompass all aspects of growing, selling, and possessing cannabis for recreational use. More information can be found at regulatemarijuana.org. Neil, welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us. First, tell us what Question 7 proposes to change in Nevada.
In sum, what we're proposing is pulling the possession and sale of small amounts of marijuana to adults out of the criminal market and put into a tightly regulated, controlled, and tax market where we can institute some sensible safeguards and we can generate some revenue instead of money from the sale of marijuana going to violent gangs and drug dealers.
Neil, is there something unique about the state of Nevada that makes taxation and regulation a viable proposal there?
I think Nevadans are a pragmatic people, and there's a bit of a libertarian streak. So there is a bit of live and let live attitude in this state, which is why we think that we've got a really good shot to pass this in less than 2 weeks now. But we have 86,000 Nevadans who signed a petition in 5 weeks to put this on the ballot, and we think we're doing pretty well.
And while many think of Las Vegas only, or perhaps Reno in Nevada, there are hundreds of very small and rural communities throughout the state. How have those rural residents responded to Question 7?
Well, we've seen a lot. Just last week, the deputy drug czar, Scott Burns, came here for a talk at a community center in rural Nevada, and there were about 30 people in the audience, and we had 12 volunteers show up to protest outside, and the audience was pretty hostile. He didn't get a very warm reception, and they were saying things like, why are we spending all this money enforcing this instead of using money for things that we need? And I'm pretty sure they thought they were going to walk into a pretty friendly audience, and they didn't. And even in rural Nevada, our opponents are meeting a lot of people who agree with what we're saying. That's the best and most recent example I could give.
And let's talk about Las Vegas for a moment. How have the city residents there responded to the idea of the taxation and regulation of marijuana?
Well, our internal polling pretty much has us at 50-50, and it has for a while. And that is pretty much spread throughout the state. So we're getting a lot of positive reaction on the doors. We're getting a lot of people coming into the office and volunteering. We're based down here in Las Vegas. And it's been pretty positive.
And Neil, if and when Question 7 is approved by voters next week, who will be in charge of making this system work in the state?
How it would work is it would become the law of the land on November 28th, 3 weeks after Election Day. And then the state would have about 6 months to set up the regulatory system. And so how the taxation would work is it would the initiative charges the Department of Taxation to set up a regulatory scheme. So if you wanted to get a license to manufacture marijuana, you would apply to the Department of Taxation for a license. It's $1,000. And then you would have to sell your marijuana to the retail establishments. There's a tax of $45 per ounce between the manufacturer and the retail establishment, and then there'd be a sales tax at the retail establishment. And the retail establishments would also be licensed by the state, just like any retail establishment is.
Now, there are some controversial tax stamps, as they're called in a few states, that can be put on marijuana, but they're not at all a true tax and regulate system for cannabis.
The tax stamp programs in a lot of places are essentially ways to add more of a penalty onto drug dealers, as I'm sure you know. It's not really a system of taxation. So this doesn't really compare to that at all. What we're talking about is pulling the sale of small amounts of marijuana to adults out of the criminal market and putting it into a tightly regulated and taxed and free market.
And Question 7 is about the adult use of marijuana and puts into place a hard age limit, much like Amendment 44 in Colorado.
You have to be over the age of 21 with a valid ID to even enter an establishment that sells marijuana, much less buy it. These establishments also cannot sell alcohol, they cannot permit gaming, they cannot be located in a gas station or a nightclub or a grocery store. So we're not talking about putting marijuana into the 7-Elevens. It's sort of a tightly regulated system is what we're proposing.
And Neil, what do you hope the overall impact of Question 7 will be if it's passed?
What I want to see is that Question 7 passes and we stop financing the activities of violent gangs and drug dealers, and we stop criminalizing the behavior of otherwise law-abiding adults who choose to unwind at the end of the day by using marijuana instead of drinking a beer. That's what I hope to achieve by passing Question 7. I don't even smoke marijuana, to be honest with you. The reason that I'm doing this is because we have a really bad policy, and we're trying to replace it with a sound policy.
How much is Nevada spending right now to arrest and prosecute peaceful marijuana smokers?
According to Jeffrey Myron, the cost of prohibition in Nevada is running around $42 million a year. And according to a UNLV study from a few years ago, our initiative would generate at least $28 million in tax revenue. So that's a pretty significant shift. And also, the tax that is generated by marijuana sales in Nevada, 50% would be dedicated to voluntary drug education and treatment, and 50% would go to the general fund.
So $10 million a year going to the state to do with it what it chooses, and 50% of that tax revenue going towards the treatment of drugs that really are harmful to society. Where does the state get its drug treatment money now?
Well, a lot of those programs are funded right now through the state, and there is roughly a 30-day wait to get into treatment. And another problem with how we currently deal with treatment in this state in this country, is that you have a lot of people who get court-mandated for marijuana offenses to mandatory treatment. So this initiative helps in twofold. One, it puts way more money into education and treatment. And two, it also frees up slots for nonviolent marijuana offenders who are choosing to go to treatment instead of going to jail, whereas these people would now not be being arrested. You know, 5,000 people, almost 5,000 people were arrested for marijuana possession in the state of Nevada in 2005. And so those people, they're not getting arrested, they're not getting fined, they're not going into the system. And those treatment slots are reserved for the people who really need them, plus we're putting a lot more money than they're putting towards it now.
And Neil, what endorsements has Question 7 received from groups in the state?
Well, we received the endorsement from a statewide coalition of religious leaders. And, you know, there is a statewide coalition of a bunch of doctors and nurses and professors and professionals who have signed on to the initiative. So, you know, when you're looking at law enforcement, they have a stake in this fight. And there's some political reasons why they're opposed to us, and why the vast majority of them, you know, even if somebody is in favor, they aren't coming out and publicly saying that they're in favor, even though we've heard a lot of people saying, hey, I'm a police officer and I support this. They would never ever say that publicly, because the entire operational structure of their department is opposed to us, you know, the powers that be. So, but when you put it out into the general community, and people are free to speak their minds, we are seeing a lot of widespread support for this initiative.
And finally, Neil, there are a number of large universities there in Las Vegas especially. How much campus support has Question 7 received?
We have campus chapters at UNLV, at UNR, and at some of the community colleges. And we are out there pushing our people to vote with everyone that we have. So a lot of the support that we've gotten, we've gotten a lot of support on campus. I was actually debating our opponents at UNLV last week, and the crowd was overwhelmingly in favor of us. I almost felt a little bad for our opponents, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's going well.
Neil Levine is the campaign director for Question 7 in Nevada. Thanks again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you. And people listening to this, they can check out our website at regulatemarijuana.org.
Nevada voters can vote early all this week, and we have links to the Committee to Regulate and Control Marijuana at normalaudiostash.com. Now it's time to round out our audio stash today with some spectacular music found up at podshow.com.
What do you know about my people smoking sensimilla? What do you know about the war going on in our streets? What do you know about the system and the peace of the peace? Say what you know about the source where your message is from. Propaganda warfare is going on.
Propaganda warfare is going on.
überaus, habe mich zurückgezogen in mein kleines sicheres Haus. Ich beobachte Tag für Tag aus einer geschützten Position und was ich da sehe, das mag ich nicht. Ich glaub es nicht, oh, du kannst mir erzählen, was du willst, solange du nur eine Seite kennst. Hast du keine Sicherheit, die andere als dein Feind zu nennen. Du musst dir schon die Mühe machen, beide Seiten zu verstehen. Du kannst doch ohne Zweifel ein gerechtes Urteil geben. Hast du Zweifel, dann glaub es nicht. Glaub es nur, wenn du sicher bist. Hast du Zweifel, dann glaub es nicht. Glaub es nur, wenn du sicher bist. Baganda, Baganda, what there's going on. 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 Baganda, Baganda, what there's going on.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stash.
Sweet.
This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.